Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. Diane Smith, registration 14340, appearing on behalf of the appellant Faithong. And it is my intent or my hope to reserve the last 3 minutes of the time for rebuttal. Your Honor, as you may recall, when lawyers go to trial, we tell our jury that the case is a puzzle that they are to solve when all the evidence is in. In this case, Judge Barnhill decided to solve that puzzle by disregarding most of the disputed evidence and jamming some of the pieces into the workers' compensation statute and resolving the issue of statutory employer as an issue of law. He made three fundamental errors in granting summary judgment. He applied the wrong state's law. He resolved disputed facts and misapplied the law as it appears in Section 401 of the Workers' Compensation Statute. And he resolved facts and misapplied the law in Section 402 of the Workers' Compensation Statute. His decision is error as a matter of law, and it must be reversed. Now, with respect to the claims in this case, Texas law should apply because Texas is the state that has the most significant relationship to the claims.
Counsel, you're not suggesting that Texas law would apply to tort liability.
Texas law would apply to resolve the question of whether Encana is responsible for the personal injury suffered by Mr. Faithong when he was working for Tesco and Turnkey in Colorado. So yes, Texas law would apply to decide the issue of personal injury in this case.
You're saying tort liability?
Right.
Texas law would apply to a case where there is no injury in that state nor any act or omission in that state?
No, Your Honor, I'm sorry. I misunderstood your question. Texas law would apply as to whether Encana can claim the immunity of statutory employer contained in the workers' compensation
statute. Okay, it seems to me that you're talking about two different types of immunity, or strike that, a liability. First is tort liability, and it seems to me clearly Colorado law would apply to that liability.
Well, that is actually a question that would have to be resolved later once the issue got past the workers' compensation immunity.
Why are the two entwined?
Well, because unless you get past statutory immunity under the workers' compensation statute, you never reach the issue of personal injury liability, whether that's Texas law or Colorado law. If you apply Colorado law and find statutory employer immunity, then you never get to the personal liability issue. Now, in this case, as you know from the briefs, Tesco and Turnkey, Mr. Faithong's employers, are both Texas corporations. They employed Mr. Faithong in Texas. Tesco and Turnkey hired, fired, and supervised all employees. And Encana, a Delaware corporation, has its corporate offices in Texas, and it never had any employment relationship with Mr. Faithong. All of the critical facts that relate to the relationship between the employer and the employee are focused in Texas. And under Texas law, in order for Encana to be a statutory employer, they had to agree to provide workers' compensation insurance to Tesco, Turnkey, and their employees. Now, we know there is no written agreement in this record that demonstrates that Encana agreed to do that. More importantly, what we know from the master service agreement and the daily service agreements, which were executed in Texas between Encana and Tesco, Encana disclaimed any obligation to provide workers' compensation insurance for anyone other than its own employees.
Let me ask you that about that, Ms. If both the subcontractors, Tesco and Turnkey, had failed to provide workers' comp for one reason or another, wouldn't Mr. Faithong be able to claim workers' comp from Encana under the very same statute we're dealing with here today?
I think, Your Honor, that is a question that depends on the nature of the agreements involved in the case, because that's really what controls here is the fact that Encana disclaimed any obligation They bring
if they disclaimed obligations among themselves, the companies. Nonetheless, the policy in Colorado is you must have workers' compensation insurance. Someone must.
Someone upstream must have workers' compensation.
And so if neither Turnkey nor Tesco had such coverage for one reason or another, hypothetically again, wouldn't he be able to claim that Encana has to cover him regardless of the disclaimer?
Hypothetically, he probably could make a claim. Whether there would be coverage or not, I don't know. I can't answer that question.
Are you talking about Texas law or Colorado law?
For
you have an agreement here that the upstream employer will not provide workers' compensation, okay? You tell me that Texas law says the upstream employer will be a statutory employer only if they agree to do so. Am I correct? Is that
my understanding of Texas law as it was developed in the trial court is that under Texas law, in order for the upstream employer, in this case in Canada, to have a statutory employer protection, they must have agreed to provide workers' compensation insurance to the downstream subcontractors, and that's contained in our brief.
All right. Now, the question that was posed under Texas law, if there is the agreement that we see in this record, would Encana be liable under Texas law for workers' compensation?
No, they would not. Now, with respect to Colorado law, if the Colorado law issues are raised, the test under 401 for whether an alleged employer is a statutory employer is whether the work contracted out is part of the employer's regular business as defined by its total business operation. And this is in the Finlay case. In applying this test, the court should consider the elements of routineness, regularity, and the importance of the contracted service to the regular business of the employer. And that is a question of fact. There is no automatic statutory employer status in Colorado. That's what the Campbell case states. It is a question of fact as to whether statutory employer protection applies. Now, in the Finlay case, the court emphasized that the contracted work has to be part of the employer's regular business operation such that if the employer couldn't contract it out, they would ordinarily accomplish it on their own. There are two cases that predate Findlay that really provide a great example of how this works. In the White versus Industrial Commission case, the court found no statutory employer status based upon the following facts. Number one, the coal mine operators did not use the trucks that were used to deliver the coal. Number two, the coal mine operators did not employ the drivers who drove those trucks to deliver the coal. The coal mine operator owners had no authority to discharge the drivers for any reason, and the coal mine owners had no control over the drivers. In that case, again, the Supreme Court found no statutory employer immunity. Contrast that with the Campbell case, Campbell versus Black Mountain Spruce. There, you had the lumber company contracted directly with the company that owned the property. The lumber company owned the equipment that injured the employee of the property owner. The lumber company employee supervised all of the work by both companies and all employees. And the lumber company employee performed identical services that were done by the injured employee both before and after the accident. When you look at those two cases, the distance that Encana maintained from the operations demonstrates that it is that the drilling operations were not part of their work. Their 30B6 representative admitted that Encana does not accomplish drilling as part of its own work. It doesn't have the employees to do it.
What does Encana do? Doesn't it produce gas?
They stated in the case that production and exploration is what Encana does. During the litigation, they claimed drilling.
Let me ask another question. How do you produce gas?
How do you produce gas? You pump it out of a well in the ground.
Yeah. Presumably. Don't you have to drill to do that?
No, you don't have to drill to do it. You can buy a well that's already been installed in the ground by someone who had the right to under their oil and gas lease to do that. Now, I think the most important thing here is not to look at what could or couldn't or might not happen, but to look at what Encana did. Mr. Faithon was injured in December of 2005. In 2004, Encana bought a company in Wyoming that had drilling assets, equipment, that's what they call it, is assets. Encana, within 3 months, turned around and sold those assets. And they stated publicly at that time that the reason they did so was because drilling was non-core to their business. When we deposed their 30B6 representative and asked, why not drill? Their 30B6 representative said it's not in our business model.
Take this another step then. If there is no well already in existence, and Encana or any other producer wants to produce gas, doesn't a well have to be drilled?
Sure.
Is that different than from after the gas has been produced, hauling it away, like in the coal mine cases? In other words, the coal has been extracted and then it's hauled away. And in a gas well, the well is drilled, the gas is extracted, and then it's hauled away.
I would agree, Your Honor, but when you look at this case, specifically what was happening in this case, the question is whether Encana owned any real property and any improvements thereon. And all there was when Mr. Faithong was injured was a hole in the ground.
Isn't that a different question, though? That's a different question as to ownership of property.
Well, the statute only provides the statutory employer protection if there is an ownership in real property or an ownership in the improvement on the real property. And but that's really the fact question in this case.
A statutory employer, if it's part of your regular business, or if you are the owner of property?
Yes, those are two separate issues, Your Honor.
Okay, so that's my question. It seems to me you're going to the second question, ownership of property.
I was indeed, Your Honor, moving on to the second question.
Okay.
And in this case, what we know from the factual record as it exists is that the only thing that Encana owned was a lease that gave it a temporary right to extract oil and gas from the ground. And even there's a question of fact about whether they had the right to do so under the conflicting leases. We also know that they were using trade fixtures and personal property, the boring equipment, the drilling equipment, everything that was being used to just to drill the hole in the ground before it ever got to the point of being cased for purposes of becoming a producing well. We know that the only thing that was on site at the time that Mr. Faithong was injured was trade fixtures and personal property, and that there was no improvement because there was no completed well. And I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is John Rauchway, attorney registration number 34786, and I represent the appellee in Encana Oil and Gas. Let me begin by rebutting the choice of law issue that my opponent raised. Colorado follows the most significant relationship test from the restatement on conflict of laws, and that involves consideration of four factors: where the injury occurred, the residence of the parties, the relationship of the parties, and policy interests.
So you're talking about tort liability, right?
I am.
What about workers' compensation liability? Could not separate statutes apply to each of those different liabilities?
I don't believe so, certainly not in this case. And there is a directly on point provision of the conflict of laws that deals expressly with workers' compensation immunity and what choice of law should apply in that situation. But I think the proper approach is to start with the general choice of law test. But whether you go under the proceed under that test or under the specific restatement test, you end up in the same place, which is that Colorado law should apply here.
On what basis do you say, are you saying then that Texas had no workers' compensation jurisdiction?
I think if Mr. Faithong had chosen to file his workers' compensation claim in Texas, pursuant to either his direct employer or any of the upstream contractors, he could have done that. But he didn't do that. He could have done that, and he did do that. But that is not the key factor in the choice of law analysis under Section 184 of the restatement.
Well, but once Texas assumed jurisdiction, you're saying that they did indeed have jurisdiction over the workers' compensation claim.
They do, and he in fact.
If that's the case, why do we not look to Texas law to determine the workers' compensation liability of the of your client?
Because when you're trying to determine which state's immunity bar applies, you look at the state where the injury occurred primarily. That's the most important factor to be considered.
And what law says that?
Well, the section of the restatement 184 deals exactly with this situation, and it says where the employer could be found immune under the law of the state where the injury occurred and in fact insured that accident, then that is the law, that law of state applies.
And has Colorado adopted that restatement section?
Colorado has not expressly adopted section 184, but Colorado's choice of law test is itself derived from the restatement. And as this court, I believe, has noted previously, the Supreme Court has never rejected any of the restatement section on conflict of laws. I don't see any reason why the court should reject that particular section, which is directly on point of the restatement here, particularly when Colorado's choice of law test was derived from the restatement itself. And so you have that specific section that deals exactly with this issue, which state's immunity bar applies. But even if you were to proceed under the more general choice of law test, you look at where the injury occurred. It's undisputed occurred here. The residence of the parties, I want to correct a misstatement that my opponent made. Encana is not a Texas corporation. It's incorporated in Delaware, but that's not relevant to anything because nobody suggests that Delaware law should apply. But its principal place of business is here in Colorado. And in fact, the plaintiffs pleaded that. That's not disputed. There's evidence to that effect, and they conceded that. It may have an office in Texas as well, but that's not relevant here. The Pathongs are not residents of Texas. They're residents of Louisiana, which again is, no one suggests Louisiana law should apply. The relationship of the parties is centered on work on Encana's wells in Colorado. Nothing, Encana has no operations in Texas that are relevant to this case. And finally, if you look at the policy considerations, several courts have recognized, including the 10th Circuit, that where the injury occurs, the state where the injury occurs is the state that has the most compelling policy interest in having their law, their state's tort bar apply. So there really shouldn't be any serious dispute on which state's law applies here. It should clearly be Colorado. And unless the court has additional questions on that issue, I'll move on to the application of Colorado's law. The district court granted summary judgment to Encana on three grounds. Two of those grounds, the regular business test under Section 401 and ownership of improvement under Section 402, were required by settled law from this court and from the Supreme Court. The third ground, ownership of property, a oil and gas lessee status as an owner of any real property under the Act, has not been the subject of any appellate decision in this state. However, it really requires only the application of well-established law in other contexts into the workers' compensation context. And this case presents the court with an opportunity to clarify the law in that area, which, as evidenced by the Wagner v. Kors case, has been undecided for at least 25 years. So while any one of these three grounds is independently sufficient for the court to affirm the district court, we're asking that the court affirm on all three grounds. Turning first to Section 401, the regular business test, a few points there. My opponent has stated a number of times that this is a question of fact. And while that is true, that does not mean that it cannot be determined as a matter of law where the operative facts are undisputed. And here they are. And for that reason, a number of occasions, this court has affirmed summary judgments on the statutory employer issue, and we've cited those issues, those cases in the brief, or at least several examples of that. When my opponent was describing what the regular business test consists of, I believe she misspoke when she said that the work is not that which is ordinarily accomplished or by the statutory employer's own employees. That's not precisely right. The test boils down to whether, in the absence of the subcontractor or contractor's services, the work would of necessity have to be accomplished by the employer's own employees.
Also, in reading the briefs, I was struck, perhaps from my background, by a far from perfect analogy, but one that goes about like this. Every large grocery chain I know of sells private label bread. Some grocery chains bake their own, others contract with a bakery to produce it. where they contract with a bakery to produce it, would you claim that they are the statutory employee of the bakery's employees? They have to have the bread break, the bread bake, in order to sell it. Some do it on their own, some contract. Are you saying in that case the grocery chain would be the statutory employer of the bakery's employees?
Well, the test would boil down to, and there would have to be some additional facts to add to your analysis, but it would have to be whether, in the absence of the subcontracted bakery services, the grocery chain couldn't function or would have to...
use their own employees to do it.
Right.
Yeah, and we know that some bakery chains do indeed have their own bakeries.
Well, the fact that other companies may or may not do it that way is really not relevant to the analysis. It's really a question of necessity, and that's been established in some cases that have explored this issue in more detail, like the Melody Holmes case and the Campbell versus Black Mountain case. The Melody Holmes case is particularly apt for the analogy I think you're getting at. In that case, there was a home builder, and an issue was whether it was a statutory employer of the security guards that patrolled the construction site. And the court determined that it wasn't relevant whether any home builder in Denver, in fact, employed its own security guards. The operative test was really whether, in the absence of the availability of security services to subcontract that work to, whether the home builder would have to use its own employees to do that. And it didn't matter whether it would have to retrain its existing employees or hire new employees with those skills. If they couldn't function without those services, the bottom line is it's part of the regular business test and they are a statutory employer.
So you're saying it's the necessity test.
It's the test.
The Colorado courts have adopted.
Absolutely. And my opponent mentioned...
That can be a very, very broad test then, can't it?
Well, it's supposed to be a broad test, and this is a very important point that I hope came through in our briefs. You've seen the cases, we cited some of them, that talk about how the Workers' Compensation Act and the statutory employer test in particular is to be broadly construed, liberally construed. This is not just a platitude of the standard that's devoid of meaning. This has very real-world consequences, and that's because the statutory employer test is applied the same way whether an employer is seeking immunity from suit or whether an injured employee is seeking benefits under the Act. This is what's called an upside-down case in workers' compensation parlance, where the injured employee is asserting that the accident is essentially non-compensable in order to avoid the tort bar. But the far more common application of the test is an employer saying it's not a statutory employer to avoid workers' compensation liability. And the test is the same either way. And if the appellant's arguments were adopted on all three of the grounds they assert them, to narrow the regular business test to apply only where the employer ordinarily uses its own employees to accomplish the work, to carve out owners of oil and gas leaseholds from the owner component of the Act, or to narrow the definition of improvements under the Act, the consequence of this is going to be to frustrate the express purpose of the Workers' Compensation Act, which is to provide expeditious benefits to injured employees on no-fault basis. Returning to the regular business test for a moment, my opponent mentioned a couple of cases for factual analogies, particularly the White case. The one distinguishing fact in the White case the court should be aware of is the facts of that case were not that a mining company was subcontracting the work of delivering the coal to its customers. The subcontractor or the alleged subcontractor was actually determined to be an independent middleman who was buying coal from the mine and delivering him to his own customers. So that case is not apposite here. There's no dispute that Tesco and Turnkey were subcontractors of Encana. But if the court is looking for a factual analogy, I think the Finlay case from the Supreme Court is a much more apt one. And in my opinion, the facts of that case are far more attenuated and perhaps represent what's on the outer edge of the spectrum of necessity and importance to satisfy the statutory employer test. And if one compares the facts of that case against the facts of this case, I just don't see how one could possibly conclude that janitorial services are so integral to the business of a computer parts manufacturer that the computer parts manufacturer is entitled to statutory employer immunity, but that drilling a natural gas well is not integral to the business of an oil and gas production company such that they're entitled to the immunity. And that raises another common sense point, which my opponent has not answered, which is that in the absence of, you know, to apply the facts of this case directly to the test established in Finlay, in the absence of drilling subcontractor services, how could Encana possibly perform its work? It couldn't. And its representative testified to that exact fact, that if we're not able to engage the services of contract drillers, which is a possibility in the industry in times of, you know, boom times where everyone is buying up all the, or contracting up all the drillers, it would have to do that work itself. He testified to that, and there's no evidence to dispute that in the record. Very briefly on Section 402 and the ownership of property and ownership of an improvement, we've already discussed ownership of property briefly. The law states that leasehold interest is a type of real property. The expansive language of the statute says it applies to any owner of real property, and coupling that with the broad interpretation of the Act, we submit that it should apply to owners of leasehold interests. On the improvement point, Wagner versus Coors is directly on point. It provides that in exactly this same context, that a petroleum well is an improvement to real property. There's no dispute here that Mr. Pathong was injured while drilling a oil and natural gas well, which is now a producing gas well. And we submit that this case is indistinguishable from Wagner. And to the extent any additional analysis is required on the improvement issue, that issue was exhaustively explored in the Barron case. And even if the court were to put the Wagner case aside and re-engage in a fulsome analysis of whether the oil and gas well was an improvement in this case, the result would be the same. And Canada's representative testified again without contradiction that the natural gas well at issue here increased the value and utility of the property. The Barron case holds that the owner of the improvement can provide such testimony. Again, that's unrebutted, and summary judgment was proper here. And if there are no further questions, we will stand on our briefs.
Thank you, Your Honors. Let's go back for a second to the choice of law issue and think for a second about the four factors that my opposing counsel identified. Place of injury, place of residence, relationship of the parties, and policy. Injury. There's no dispute the injury occurred in Colorado. Residence of the parties. Tesco, Turnkey, Texas corporations. Encana, it's a Delaware corporation, but Mr. Fox, their corporate representative, testified in his 30B6 deposition that their corporate offices were in Texas. Relationship of the parties. All of the contracts that were signed in this case were signed in Texas. The workers' compensation policy has a state of hire provision that makes Texas law applicable.
And can I ask you a question? Are you disputing that Encana is headquartered in Colorado?
Your Honor, my understanding from the 30B6 deposition testimony of the individual, Mr. Fox, that they identified stated that their corporate offices are in Texas. And that information is attached to our response to the motion for summary judgment.
Is there anything else with respect to that issue in the record that you recall?
Not that I recall, Your Honor. Not that I recall as I stand here. Let's look at the facts of this case. And I want to go back because I want to make sure I have the exact language from the Finley case. The Finley case, quoting Pioneer Construction, said that the work must be such, quote, as the statutory employer ordinarily would accomplish with his own employees. That's at page 66, quoting Pioneer. Encana accomplished this work 100% of the time using subcontractors.
Doesn't Finley also have the necessity language?
They do have the necessity language, and we've already talked about that.
Are you saying there's two different tests, Sam?
I don't know that there is two different tests. The Finley test is a little mushed being a term of art. But what I do know in that is that getting a well, Encana could get wells without actually having to drill them, and that's one of the things that we already talked about. I'm sorry, I'm out of time. Thank you.
Thank you both for your arguments this morning. Case will stand submitted. We'll get you a written opinion in due course.